Maybe there's something special about your knife, I said.
It is the same as mine, Zoe said. Celestial bronze, yes, but mine did not affect the warriors that way.
Maybe you have to hit the skeleton in a certain spot, I said. Bianca looked uncomfortable with everybody paying attention to her.
Never mind, Zoe told her. We will find the answer. In the meantime, we should plan our next move. When we get through this junkyard, we must continue west. If we can find a road, we can hitchhike to the nearest city. I think that would be Las Vegas.
I was about to protest that Grover and I had had bad experiences in that town, but Bianca beat us to it.
No, she said, not there.
She looked really freaked out, like she'd just been dropped off the steep end of a roller coaster. Zoe frowned.
Why?
Bianca took a shaky breath.
I think we stayed there for a while, Nico and I, when we were traveling, and then I can't remember.
Suddenly, I had a really bad thought. I remembered what Bianca had told me about Nico and her staying in a hotel for a while. I met Grover's eyes, and I got the feeling he was thinking the same thing.
Bianca, I said, that hotel you stayed at, was it possibly called the Lotus Hotel and Casino?
Her eyes widened.
How could you know that?
Oh, great, I said.
Wait, Thalia said, what is the Lotus Casino?
A couple of years ago, I said, Grover, Annabeth, and I got trapped there. It's designed so you never want to leave. We stayed for about an hour. When we came out, 5 days had passed. It makes time speed up.
No, Bianca said. No, that's not possible.
You said somebody came and got you out, I remembered.
Yes.
What did he look like? What did he say?
I don't remember. Please, I really don't want to talk about this.
Zoe sat forward, her eyebrows knit with concern.
You said that Washington, D.C. had changed when you went back last summer. You didn't remember the subway being there.
Yes, but...
Bianca, Zoe said, can you tell me the name of the President of the United States right now?
Don't be silly, Bianca said.
She told us the correct name of the president.
And who was the president before that? Zoe asked.
Bianca thought for a while.
Roosevelt.
Zoe swallowed.
Theodore or Franklin?
Franklin,
Bianca said.
FDR.
Like FDR Drive? I asked, because seriously, that's about all I knew about FDR.
Bianca, Zoe said, FDR was not the last president. That was about 70 years ago.
That's impossible, Bianca said. I'm not that old.
She stared at her hands as if to make sure they weren't wrinkled. Thalia's eyes turned sad. I guess she knew what it was like to get pulled out of time for a while.
It's okay, Bianca. The important thing is, you and Nico are safe. You made it out.
But how? I said. We were only in there for an hour, and we barely escaped. How could you have escaped after being there for so long?
I told you.
Bianca looked about ready to cry.
A man came and said it was time to leave, and...
But who? Why did he do it? Before she could answer, we were hit with a blazing light from down the road. The headlights of a car appeared out of nowhere. I was half hoping it was Apollo, come to give us a ride again, but the engine was way too silent for the sun chariot, and besides, it was nighttime. We grabbed our sleeping bags and got out of the way as a deathly white limousine slid to a stop in front of us.
The back door of the limo opened right next to me. Before I could step away, the point of a sword touched my throat. I heard the sound of Zoe and Bianca drawing their bows. As the owner of the sword got out of the car, I moved back very slowly. I had to,
because he was pushing the point under my chin. He smiled cruelly.
Not so fast now, are you, punk?
He was a big man with a crew cut, a black leather biker's jacket, black jeans, a white muscle shirt, and combat boots. Wraparound shades hid his eyes, but I knew what was behind those glasses, hollow sockets filled with flames.
Ares, I growled.
The war god glanced at my friends.
At ease, people.
He snapped his fingers, and their weapons fell to the ground.
This is a friendly meeting.
He dug the point of his blade a little farther under my chin.
Of course, I'd like to take your head for a trophy, but someone wants to see you, and I never behead my enemies in front of a lady.
What lady? Thalia asked. Ares looked over at her.
Well, well, I heard you were back.
He lowered his sword and pushed me away.
Thalia, daughter of Zeus, Ares mused. You're not hanging out with very good company.
What's your business, Ares? She said. Who's in the car? Ares smiled, enjoying the attention.
Oh, I doubt she wants to meet the rest of you. Particularly not them.
He jutted his chin towards Zoe and Bianca.
Why don't you all go get some tacos while you wait? Only take Percy a few minutes.
We will not leave him alone with thee, Lord Ares, Zoe said.
Besides, Grover managed, the taco place is closed.
Ares snapped his fingers again. The lights inside the taqueria suddenly blazed to life. The boards flew off the door, and the closed sign flipped to open.
You were saying, goat boy?
Go on, I told my friends. I'll handle this. I tried to sound more confident than I felt. I don't think Ares was fooled.
You heard the boy, Ares said. He's big and strong. He's got things under control.
My friends reluctantly headed over to the taco restaurant. Ares regarded me with loathing, then opened the limousine door like a chauffeur.
Get inside, punk, he said, and mind your manners. She's not as forgiving of rudeness as I am.
When I saw her, my jaw dropped. I forgot my name. I forgot where I was. I forgot how to speak in complete sentences. She was wearing a red satin dress, and her hair was curled in a cascade of ringlets. Her face was the most beautiful I'd ever seen. Perfect makeup, dazzling eyes, a smile that would have lit up the dark side of the moon. Thinking back on it, I can't tell you who she looked like, or even what color her hair or her eyes were. Pick the most beautiful actress you can think of. The goddess was 10 times more beautiful than that. Pick your favorite hair color, eye color, whatever. The goddess had that. When she smiled at me, just for a moment, she looked a little like Annabeth. Then like this television actress I used to have a crush on in 5th grade. Then, well, you get the idea.
Ah, there you are, Percy, the goddess said. I am Aphrodite.
I slipped into the seat across from her and said something like, She smiled.
Aren't you sweet? Hold this, please.
She handed me a polished mirror the size of a dinner plate and had me hold it up for her. She leaned forward and dabbed at her lipstick, though I couldn't see anything wrong with it.
Do you know why you're here? She asked.
I wanted to respond. Why couldn't I form a complete sentence? She was only a lady, a seriously beautiful lady, with eyes like pools of spring water. Whoa. I pinched my own arm, hard.
I don't know, I managed. Oh, dear, Aphrodite said. Still in denial?
Outside the car, I could hear Ares chuckling. I had a feeling he could hear every word we said. The idea of him being out there made me angry, and that helped clear my mind. I don't know what you're talking about, I said.
Well, then,
Why are you on this quest?
Artemis has been captured.
Aphrodite rolled her eyes. Oh, Artemis, please. Talk about a hopeless case. I mean, if they were going to kidnap a goddess, she should be breathtakingly beautiful, don't you think? I pity the poor dears who have to imprison Artemis. Boring.
But she was chasing a monster, I protested.
A really, really bad monster. We have to find it.
Aphrodite made me hold the mirror a little higher. She seemed to have found a microscopic problem at the corner of her eye and dabbed at her mascara.
Always some monster. But my dear Percy, that is why the others are on this quest. I'm more interested in you.
My heart pounded. I didn't want to answer, but her eyes drew an answer right out of my mouth.
Annabeth is in trouble.
Aphrodite beamed.
Exactly.
I have to help her, I said. I've been having these dreams.
Ah, you even dream about her. That's so cute.
No, I mean, that's not what I meant. She made a tisk-tisk sound.
Percy, I'm on your side. I'm the reason you're here, after all.
I stared at her.
What? The poison t-shirt the Stoll brothers gave Phoebe, she said.
Did you think that was an accident?
Sending Blackjack to find you? Helping you sneak out of the camp?
You did that?
Of course, because really, how boring these hunters are. A quest for some monster, blah, blah, blah. Saving Artemis. Let her stay lost, I say. But a quest for true love?
Wait a second. I never said,
oh, my dear, you don't need to say it. You do know Annabeth was close to joining the hunters, don't you?
I blushed. I wasn't sure.
She was about to throw her life away, and you, my dear, you can save her from that. It's so romantic.
Oh, put the mirror down, Aphrodite ordered.
I look fine.
I hadn't realized I was still holding it, but as soon as I put it down, I noticed my arms were sore.
Now listen, Percy, Aphrodite said. The hunters are your enemies. Forget them and Artemis and the monster. That's not important. You just concentrate on finding and saving Annabeth.
Do you know where she is? Aphrodite waved her hand irritably.
No, no, I leave the details to you, but it's been ages since we've had a good tragic love story.
Whoa, first of all, I never said anything about love. And second, what's up with tragic?
Love conquers all, Aphrodite promised. Look at Helen and Paris. Did they let anything come between them?
Didn't they start the Trojan War and get thousands of people killed?
That's not the point. Follow your heart.
But I don't know where it's going. My heart, I mean.
She smiled sympathetically. She really was beautiful. And not just because she had a pretty face or anything. She believed in love so much, it was impossible not to feel giddy when she talked about it. Not knowing is half the fun, Aphrodite said. Exquisitely painful, isn't it? Not being sure who you love and who loves you. Oh, you kids. It's so cute, I'm going to cry.
No, no, I said. Don't do that.
And don't worry, she said. I'm not going to let this be easy and boring for you. No, I have some wonderful surprises in store. Anguish, indecision. Oh, you just wait.
That's really okay, I told her. Don't go to any trouble.
You're so cute. I wish all my daughters could break the heart of a boy as nice as you.
Aphrodite's eyes were tearing up.
Now you better go. And do be careful in my husband's territory, Percy. Don't take anything. He is awfully fussy about his trinkets and trash.
What? I asked. You mean Hephaestus?
But the car door opened and Ares grabbed my shoulder, pulling me out of the car and back into the desert night. My audience with the goddess of love was over.
You're lucky, punk.
Ares pushed me away from the limo.
Be grateful.
For what?
That we're being so nice. If it was up to me.
So why haven't you killed me? I shot back. It was a stupid thing to say to the god of war, but being around him always made me feel angry and reckless. Ares nodded, like I'd finally said something intelligent.
I'd love to kill you, seriously, he said. But see, I got a situation. Word on Olympus is that you might start the biggest war in history. I can't risk messing that up. Besides, Aphrodite thinks you're some kind of soap opera star or something. I kill you, that makes me look bad with her. But don't worry, I haven't forgotten my promise. Someday soon, kid, real soon, you're gonna raise your sword to fight, and you're gonna remember the wrath of Ares.
I balled my fists. Why wait? I beat you once. How's that ankle healing up?
He grinned crookedly. Not bad, punk. But you got nothing on the master of taunts. I'll start the fight when I'm good and ready. Until then, get lost.
He snapped his fingers, and the world did a 360, spinning in a cloud of red dust. I fell to the ground. When I stood up again, the limousine was gone. The road, the taco restaurant, the whole town of Helaclaw was gone. My friends and I were standing in the middle of the junkyard, mountains of scrap metal stretched out in every direction.
What did she want with you? Bianca asked, once I told them about Aphrodite.
Not sure. I lied. She said to be careful in her husband's junkyard. She said not to pick anything up.
Zoe narrowed her eyes. The goddess of love would not make a special trip to tell thee that. Be careful, Percy. Aphrodite has led many heroes astray.
For once, I agree with Zoe, Thalia said. You can't trust Aphrodite.
Grover was looking at me funny. Being empathetic and all, he could usually read my emotions, and I got the feeling he knew exactly what Aphrodite had talked to me about.
So, I said, anxious to change the subject. How do we get out of here?
That way, Zoe said. That is west.
How can you tell?
In the light of the full moon, I was surprised how well I could see her roll her eyes at me.
Ursa Major is in the north, she said, which means that must be west.
She pointed west, then at the northern constellation, which was hard to make out because there were so many other stars.
Oh, yeah, I said. The bear thing.
Zoe looked offended.
Show some respect. It was a fine bear, a worthy opponent.
You act like it was real.
Guys, Grover broke in, look.
We'd reached the crest of a junk mountain. Piles of metal objects glinted in the moonlight. Broken heads of bronze horses, metal legs from human statues, smashed chariots, tons of shields and swords and other weapons, along with more modern stuff, like cars that gleamed gold and silver, refrigerators, washing machines, and computer monitors.
Whoa, Bianca said. That stuff, some of it looks like real gold.
It is, Thalia said grimly. Like Percy said, don't touch anything. This is the junkyard of the gods.
Junk?
Grover picked up a beautiful crown made of gold, silver, and jewels. It was broken on one side, as if it had been split by an axe.
You call this junk?
He bit off a point and began to chew.
It's delicious.
Thalia swatted the crown out of his hands.
I'm serious.
Look! Bianca said. She raced down the hill, tripping over bronze coils and golden plates. She picked up a bow that glowed silver in moonlight.
A hunter's bow!
She yelped in surprise as the bow began to shrink and became a hair clip shaped like a crescent moon.
It's just like Percy's sword!
Zoe's face was grim.
Leave it, Bianca.
But it is here for a reason. Anything thrown away in this junkyard must stay in this yard. It is defective or cursed.
Bianca reluctantly set the hair clip down. I don't like this place, Thalia said. She gripped the shaft of her spear.
You think we're going to get attacked by killer refrigerators? I asked. She gave me a hard look.
Zoe is right, Percy. Things get thrown away here for a reason. Now come on, let's get across the yard.
That's the second time you've agreed with Zoe, I muttered, but Thalia ignored me. We started picking our way through the hills and valleys of junk. The stuff seemed to go on forever, and if it hadn't been for Ursa Major, we would have gotten lost. All the hills pretty much looked the same. I'd like to say we left the stuff alone, but there was too much cool junk not to check out some of it. I found an electric guitar shaped like Apollo's lyre that was so sweet I had to pick it up. Grover found a broken tree made out of metal. It had been chopped to pieces, but some of the branches still had golden birds in them, and they whirred around when Grover picked them up, trying to flap their wings. Finally, we saw the edge of the junkyard about half a mile ahead of us, the lights of a highway stretching through the desert. But between us and the road?
What is that? Bianca gasped.
Ahead of us was a hill much bigger and longer than the others. It was like a metal mesa, the length of a football field and as tall as goalposts. At one end of the mesa was a row of 10 thick metal columns wedged tightly together. Bianca frowned.
They look like... toes,
Grover said. Bianca nodded.
Really, really large toes.
Zoe and Thalia exchanged nervous looks.
Let's go around, Thalia said. Far around.
But the road is right over there, I protested. Quicker to climb over.
Ping!
Thalia hefted her spear and Zoe drew her bow. But then I realized it was only Grover. He had thrown a piece of scrap metal at the toes and hit one, making a deep echo as if the column were hollow.
Why did you do that? Zoe demanded.
Grover cringed.
I don't know. I don't like fake feet.
Come on.
Thalia looked at me.
Around.
I didn't argue. The toes were starting to freak me out, too. I mean... who sculpts 10-foot-tall metal toes and sticks them in a junkyard? After several minutes of walking, we finally stepped onto the highway, an abandoned but well-lit stretch of black asphalt.
We made it out, Zoe said. Thank the gods.
But apparently the gods didn't want to be thanked. At that moment, I heard a sound like 1,000 trash compactors crushing metal. I whirled around. Behind us, the scrap mountain was boiling, rising up. The 10 toes tilted over, and I realized why they looked like toes. They were toes. The thing that rose up from the metal was a bronze giant in full Greek battle armor. He was impossibly tall, a skyscraper with legs and arms. He gleamed wickedly in the moonlight. He looked down at us, and his face was deformed. The left side was partially melted off. His joints creaked with rust, and across his armored chest, written in thick dust by some giant finger, were the words, "Wash me."
Talus! Zoe gasped.
Who? Who's Talus? I stuttered.
One of Hephaestus's creations, Thalia said. But that can't be the original. It's too small. A prototype, maybe. A defective model.
The metal giant didn't like the word defective. He moved one hand to his sword belt and drew his weapon. The sound of it coming out of its sheath was horrible, metal screeching against metal. The blade was 100 feet long, easy. It looked rusty and dull, but I didn't figure that mattered. Getting hit with that thing would be like getting hit with a battleship.
Someone took something, Zoe said.
Who took something?
She stared accusingly at me. I shook my head. I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a thief. Bianca didn't say anything. I could swear she looked guilty, but I didn't have much time to think about it because the giant defective Talos took one step toward us, closing half the distance and making the ground shake.
Run! Grover yelped.
Great advice, except that it was hopeless. At a leisurely stroll, this thing could outdistance us easily. We split up, the way we'd done with the Nemean lion. Thalia drew her shield and held it up as she ran down the highway. The giant swung his sword and took out a row of power lines, which exploded in sparks and scattered across Thalia's path. Zoe's arrows whistled toward the creature's face but shattered harmlessly against the metal. Grover brayed like a baby goat and went climbing up a mountain of metal. Bianca and I ended up next to each other, hiding behind a broken chariot. "You took something," I said. "That bow."
"No,"
she said, but her voice was quivering. "Give it back," I said. "Throw it down."
I didn't take the bow. Besides, it's too late.
"What did you take?" Before she could answer, I heard a massive creaking noise, and a shadow blotted out the sky.
"Move!"
I tore down the hill, Bianca right behind me, as the giant's foot smashed a crater in the ground where we'd been hiding.
"Hey, Talos!"
Grover yelled, but the monster raised his sword, looking down at Bianca and me. Grover played a quick melody on his pipes. Over at the highway, the downed power lines began to dance. I understood what Grover was going to do a split second before it happened. One of the poles with power lines still attached flew toward Talos's back leg and wrapped around his calf. The line sparked and sent a jolt of electricity up the giant's backside. Talos whirled around, creaking and sparking. Grover had bought us a few seconds. "Come on," I told Bianca, but she stayed frozen. From her pocket, she brought out a small metal figurine, a statue of a god.
It was for Nico. It was the only statue we didn't have.
"How can you think of myth and magic at a time like this?"
I said. There were tears in her eyes.
"Throw it down," I said. "Maybe the giant will leave us alone."
She dropped it reluctantly, but nothing happened. The giant kept coming after Grover. It stabbed its sword into a junk hill, missing Grover by a few feet, but scrap metal made an avalanche over him, and then I couldn't see him anymore.
"No!"
Thalia yelled. She pointed her spear, and a blue arc of lightning shot out, hitting the monster on his rusty knee, which buckled. The giant collapsed, but immediately started to rise again. It was hard to tell if it could feel anything. There weren't any emotions in its half-melted face, but I got the sense that it was about as ticked off as a 20-story-tall metal warrior could be. He raised his foot to stomp, and I saw that his sole was treaded like the bottom of a sneaker. There was a hole in his heel, like a large manhole, and there were red words painted around it, which I deciphered only after the foot came down. "For maintenance only."
"Crazy idea time,"
I said. Bianca looked at me nervously.
"Anything!"
I told her about the maintenance hatch.
"There may be a way to control the thing. Switches or something. I'm going to get inside."
"How? You'll have to stand under its foot. You'll be crushed."
"Distract it," I said. "I'll just have to time it right."
Bianca's jaw tightened.
"No, I'll go."
"You can't. You're new at this. You'll die."
"It's my fault the monster came after us," she said. "It's my responsibility. Here."
She picked up the little god statue and pressed it into my hand.
"If anything happens, give that to Nico. Tell him I'm sorry."
"Bianca, no."
But she wasn't waiting for me. She charged at the monster's left foot. Thalia had its attention for the moment. She'd learned that the giant was big but slow. If you could stay close to it and not get smashed, you could run around it and stay alive. At least, it was working so far. Bianca got right next to the giant's foot, trying to balance herself on the metal scraps that swayed and shifted with his weight. Zoe yelled, "What are you doing?"
"Get it to raise its foot," she said.
Zoe shot an arrow toward the monster's face, and it flew straight into one nostril. The giant straightened and shook its head.
"Hey, junk boy," I yelled, "down here."
I ran up to its big toe and stabbed it with Riptide. The magic blade cut a gash in the bronze. Unfortunately, my plan worked. Talus looked down at me and raised his foot to squash me like a bug. I didn't see what Bianca was doing. I had to turn and run. The foot came down about 2 inches behind me, and I was knocked into the air. I hit something hard and sat up, dazed. I'd been thrown into an Olympus air refrigerator. The monster was about to finish me off, but Grover somehow dug himself out of the junk pile. He played his pipes frantically, and his music sent another power line pole whacking against Talus's thigh. The monster turned. Grover should have run, but he must have been too exhausted from the effort of so much magic. He took 2 steps, fell, and didn't get back up.
"Grover!"
Thalia and I both ran toward him, but I knew we'd be too late. The monster raised his sword to smash Grover, then he froze. Talus cocked his head to one side, like he was hearing strange new music. He started moving his arms and legs in weird ways, doing the funky chicken. Then he made a fist and punched himself in the face.
"Go, Bianca!" I yelled.
Zoe looked horrified.
"She is inside?"
The monster staggered around, and I realized we were still in danger. Thalia and I grabbed Grover and ran with him toward the highway. Zoe was already ahead of us. She yelled,
"How will Bianca get out?"
The giant hit itself in the head again and dropped his sword. A shudder ran through his whole body, and he staggered toward the power lines.
"Look out!"
I yelled, but it was too late. The giant's ankle snared the lines, and blue flickers of electricity shot up his body. I hoped the inside was insulated. I had no idea what was going on in there. The giant careened back into the junkyard, and his right hand fell off, landing in the scrap metal with a horrible clang. His left arm came loose, too. He was falling apart at the joints. Talus began to run.
"Wait!"
Zoe yelled. We ran after him, but there was no way we could keep up. Pieces of the robot kept falling off, getting in our way. The giant crumbled from the top down, his head, his chest, and finally his legs collapsed. When we reached the wreckage, we searched frantically, yelling Bianca's name. We crawled around in the vast hollow pieces and the legs and the head. We searched until the sun started to rise, but no luck. Zoe sat down and wept. I was stunned to see her cry. Thalia yelled in rage and impaled her sword in the giant's smashed face.
"We can keep searching," I said. "It's light now. We'll find her."
"No, we won't," Grover said miserably. "It happened just as it was supposed to."
"What are you talking about?" I demanded. He looked up at me with big watery eyes.
"The prophecy. One shall be lost in the land without rain."
Why hadn't I seen it? Why had I let her go instead of me? Here we were in the desert, and Bianca D'Angelo was gone. Chapter 14. I Have a Dam Problem. At the edge of the dump, we found a tow truck so old it might have been thrown away itself. But the engine started, and it had a full tank of gas, so we decided to borrow it. Thalia drove. She didn't seem as stunned as Zoe or Grover or me.
"The skeletons are still out there," she reminded us. "We need to keep moving."
She navigated us through the desert, under clear blue skies, the sand so bright it hurt to look at. Zoe sat up front with Thalia. Grover and I sat in the pickup bed, leaning against the tow wench. The air was cool and dry, but the nice weather just seemed like an insult after losing Bianca. My hand closed around a little figurine that had cost her life. I still couldn't even tell what god it was supposed to be. Nico would know. Oh, gods. What was I going to tell Nico? I wanted to believe that Bianca was still alive somewhere, but I had a bad feeling that she was gone for good. It should have been me, I said. I should have gone into the giant.
Don't say that, Grover panicked. It's bad enough Annabeth is gone, and now Bianca. Do you think I could stand it if...
He sniffled.
Do you think anybody else would be my best friend?
Grover... He wiped under his eyes with an oily cloth that left his face grimy like he had on war paint.
I'm okay.
But he wasn't okay. Ever since the encounter in New Mexico, whatever had happened when that wild wind blew through, he seemed really fragile, even more emotional than usual. I was afraid to talk to him about it, because he might start bawling. At least there's one good thing about having a friend who gets freaked out more than you do. I realized I couldn't stay depressed. I had to set aside thinking about Bianca and keep us going forward, the way Thalia was doing. I wondered what she and Zoe were talking about in the front of the truck. The tow truck ran out of gas at the edge of a river canyon. That was just as well, because the road dead-ended. Thalia got out and slammed the door. Immediately, one of the tires blew.
Great! What now?
I scanned the horizon. There wasn't much to see. Desert in all directions, occasional clumps of barren mountains plopped here and there. The canyon was the only thing interesting. The river itself wasn't very big, maybe 50 yards across, green water with a few rapids, but it carved a huge scar out of the desert. The rock cliffs dropped away below us.
There's a path, Grover said. We could get to the river.
I tried to see what he was talking about, and finally noticed a tiny ledge winding down the cliff face.
That's a goat path, I said. So? He asked.
The rest of us aren't goats.
We can make it, Grover said. I think.
I thought about that. I'd done cliffs before, but I didn't like them. Then I looked over at Thalia and saw how pale she'd gotten. Her problem with heights? She'd never be able to do it.
No, I said. I think we should go farther upstream.
Grover said,
But...
Come on, I said. A walk won't hurt us. I glanced at Thalia. Her eyes said a quick, Thank you. We followed the river about half a mile before coming to an easier slope that led down to the water. On the shore was a canoe rental operation that was closed for the season, but I left a stack of golden drachmas on the counter and a note saying, I owe you 2 canoes.
We need to go upstream, Zoe said.
It was the first time I'd heard her speak since the junkyard, and I was worried about how bad she sounded, like somebody with the flu.
The rapids are too swift.
Leave that to me, I said. We put the canoes in the water. Thalia pulled me aside as we were getting the oars.
Thanks for back there.
Don't mention it. Can you really? She nodded to the rapids.
You know.
I think so. Usually I'm good with water.
Would you take Zoe? She asked. I think, maybe you can talk to her.
She's not going to like that.
Please. I don't know if I can stand being in the same boat with her. She's starting to worry me.
It was about the last thing I wanted to do, but I nodded. Thalia's shoulders relaxed.
I owe you one.
2.
1.5,
Thalia said. She smiled, and for a second, I remembered that I actually liked her when she wasn't yelling at me. She turned and helped Grover get their canoe into the water. As it turned out, I didn't even need to control the currents. As soon as we got in the river, I looked over the edge of the boat and found a couple of naiads staring at me. They looked like regular teenage girls, the kind you'd see in any mall, except for the fact that they were underwater.
Hey,
I said.
They made a bubbling sound that may have been giggling. I wasn't sure. I had a hard time understanding naiads.
"We're heading upstream," I told them. "Do you think you could..."
Before I could even finish, the naiads each chose a canoe and began pushing us up the river. We started so fast, Grover fell into his canoe with his hooves sticking up in the air.
"I hate naiads," Zoe grumbled.
A stream of water squirted up from the back of the boat and hit Zoe in the face.
"She devils!"
Zoe went for her bow. "Whoa," I said. "They're just playing."
"Cursed water spirits! They've never forgiven me."
"Forgiven you for what?"
She slung her bow back over her shoulder. "It was a long time ago. Never mind."
We sped up the river, the cliffs looming up on either side of us. "What happened to Bianca wasn't your fault," I told her. "It was my fault. I let her go." I figured this would give Zoe an excuse to start yelling at me. At least that might shake her out of feeling depressed. Instead, her shoulders slumped.
"No, Percy, I pushed her into going on the quest. I was too anxious. She was a powerful half-blood. She had a kind heart as well. I thought she would be the next lieutenant."
"But you're the lieutenant." She gripped the strap of her quiver. She looked more tired than I'd ever seen her.
"Nothing can last forever, Percy. Over 2,000 years I have led the hunt, and my wisdom has not improved. Now Artemis herself is in danger."
"Look, you can't blame yourself for that."
"If I had insisted on going with her..."
"You think you could have fought something powerful enough to kidnap Artemis? There's nothing you could have done." Zoe didn't answer. The cliffs along the river were getting taller. Long shadows fell across the water, making it a lot colder, even though the day was bright. Without thinking about it, I took Riptide out of my pocket. Zoe looked at the pen, and her expression was pained.
"You made this," I said. "Who told thee?"
"I had a dream about it." She studied me. I was sure she was going to call me crazy, but she just sighed.
"It was a gift and a mistake."
"Who was the hero?" I asked. Zoe shook her head.
"Do not make me say his name. I swore never to speak it again."
"You act like I should know him."
"I am sure you do, hero. Don't all you boys want to be just like him?"
Her voice was so bitter, I decided not to ask what she meant. I looked down at Riptide, and for the first time, I wondered if it was cursed. "Your mother was a water goddess?" I asked.
"Yes, Pleione. She had 5 daughters, my sisters and I, the Hesperides."
"Those were the girls who lived in a garden at the edge of the West, with the golden apple tree and a dragon guarding it."
"Yes," Zoe said wistfully. "Leiden."
"But weren't there only 4 sisters?
"There are now. I was exiled, forgotten, blotted out as if I never existed."
"Why?" Zoe pointed to my pen.
"Because I betrayed my family and helped a hero. You won't find that in the legend either. He never spoke of me. After his direct assault on Leiden failed, I gave him the idea of how to steal the apples, how to trick my father, but he took all the credit."
"But..." Gurgle, gurgle. The naiad spoke in my mind. The canoe was slowing down. I looked ahead, and I saw why. This was as far as they could take us. The river was blocked. A dam the size of a football stadium stood in our path.
"Hoover Dam," Thalia said. "It's huge."
We stood at the river's edge, looking up at a curve of concrete that loomed between the cliffs. People were walking along the top of the dam. They were so tiny, they looked like fleas. The naiads had left with a lot of grumbling. Not in words I could understand, but it was obvious they hated this dam blocking up their nice river. Our canoes floated back downstream, swirling in the wake from the dam's discharge vents.
700 feet tall, I said.
built in the 1930s. 5 million cubic acres of water, Thalia said. Grover sighed.
Oh, largest construction project in the United States.
Zoe stared at us. How do you know all that?
Annabeth, I said.
She liked architecture. She was nuts about monuments, Thalia said. Spouted facts all the time. Grover sniffled.
So annoying.
I wish you were here, I said. The others nodded. Zoe was still looking at us strangely, but I didn't care. It seemed like cruel fate that we'd come to Hoover Dam, one of Annabeth's personal favorites, and she wasn't here to see it. We should go up there, I said, for her sake, just to say we've been.
You are mad, Zoe decided. But that's where the road is.
She pointed to a huge parking garage next to the top of the dam.
And so, sightseeing it is.
We had to walk for almost an hour before we found a path that led up to the road. It came up on the east side of the river. Then we straggled back toward the dam. It was cold and windy on top. On one side, a big lake spread out, ringed by barren desert mountains. On the other side, the dam dropped away like the world's most dangerous skateboard ramp down to the river 700 feet below and water that churned from the dam's vents. Thalia walked in the middle of the road, far away from the edges. Grover kept sniffing the wind and looking nervous. He didn't say anything, but I knew he smelled monsters. How close are they? I asked him. He shook his head.
Maybe not close. The wind on the dam? The desert all around us? The scent can probably carry for miles, but it's coming from several directions. I don't like that.
I didn't either. It was already Wednesday, only 2 days until winter solstice, and we still had a long way to go. We didn't need any more monsters.
There's a snack bar in the visitor center, Thalia said.
You've been here before? I asked.
Once, to see the guardians.
She pointed to the far end of the dam. Carved into the side of the cliff was a little plaza with two big bronze statues. They looked kind of like Oscar statues with wings.
They were dedicated to Zeus when the dam was built, Thalia said. A gift from Athena.
Tourists were cluttered all around them. They seemed to be looking at the statue's feet.
What are they doing? I asked. Rubbing the toes, Thalia said. They think it's good luck.
Why?
She shook her head. Mortals get crazy ideas. They don't know the statues are sacred to Zeus, but they know there's something special about them.
When you were here last, did they talk to you or anything? Thalia's expression darkened. I could tell that she'd come here before, hoping for exactly that. Some kind of sign from her dad. Some connection.
No, they don't do anything. They're just big metal statues.
I thought about the last big metal statue we'd run into. That hadn't gone so well, but I decided not to bring it up.
Let us find the damn snack bar, Zoe said. We should eat while we can.
Grover cracked a smile.
The damn snack bar?
Zoe blinked.
Yes, what is funny?
Nothing, Grover said, trying to keep a straight face. I could use some damn French fries.
Even Thalia smiled at that.
And I need to use the damn restroom?
Maybe it was the fact that we were so tired and strung out emotionally, but I started cracking up, and Thalia and Grover joined in, while Zoe just looked at us.
I do not understand.
I want to use the damn water fountain, Grover said.
And
Thalia tried to catch her breath.
I want to buy a damn t-shirt.
I busted up. And I probably would have kept laughing all day, but then I heard a noise.
Boo!
The smile melted off my face. I wondered if the noise was just in my head, but Grover had stopped laughing too. He was looking around, confused.
Did I just hear a cow? A damn cow?
Thalia laughed.
No, Grover said. I'm serious.
Zoe listened.
I hear nothing.
Thalia was looking at me.
Percy, are you okay?
Yeah, I said. You guys go ahead. I'll be right in.
What's wrong?
Grover asked.
Nothing, I said. I just need a minute to think.
They hesitated, but I guess I must have looked upset, because they finally went into the visitor center without me. As soon as they were gone, I jogged to the north end of the dam and looked over.
Moo!
She was about 30 feet below in the lake, but I could see her clearly. My friend from Long Island Sound, Bessie the Cow Serpent. I looked around. There were groups of kids running along the dam. A lot of senior citizens, some families, but nobody seemed to be paying Bessie any attention yet.
What are you doing here?
I asked her.
Moo!
Her voice was urgent, like she was trying to warn me of something.
How did you get here?
I asked. We were thousands of miles from Long Island, hundreds of miles inland. There was no way she could have swum all the way here, and yet here she was. Bessie swam in a circle and butted her head against the side of the dam.
Moo!
She wanted me to come with her. She was telling me to hurry.
I can't, I told her. My friends are inside.
She looked at me with her sad brown eyes. Then she gave one more urgent
moo,
did a flip, and disappeared into the water. I hesitated. Something was wrong. She was trying to tell me that. I considered jumping over the side and following her, but then I tensed. The hairs of my arms bristled. I looked down the dam road to the east, and I saw two men walking slowly toward me. They wore gray camouflage outfits that flickered over skeletal bodies. They passed through a group of kids and pushed them aside. A kid yelled,
"Hey!"
One of the warriors turned, his face changing momentarily into a skull.
"Ah!"
the kid yelled, and his whole group backed away. I ran for the visitor center. I was almost to the stairs when I heard tires squeal. On the west side of the dam, a black van swerved to a stop in the middle of the road, nearly plowing into some old people. The van doors opened, and more skeleton warriors piled out. I was surrounded. I bolted down the stairs and through the museum entrance. The security guard at the metal detector yelled,
"Hey, kid!"
But I didn't stop. I ran through the exhibits and ducked behind a tour group. I looked for my friends, but I couldn't see them anywhere. Where was the damn snack bar?
"Stop!"
the metal detector guy yelled. There was no place to go but into an elevator with a tour group. I ducked inside just as the door closed.
"We'll be going down 700 feet, our tour guide said cheerfully.
She was a park ranger, with long black hair pulled back in a ponytail and tinted glasses. I guess she hadn't noticed that I was being chased.
"Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. The elevator hardly ever breaks."
"Does this go to the snack bar?" I asked her. A few people behind me chuckled. The tour guide looked at me. Something about her gaze made my skin tingle.
"To the turbines, young man," the lady said. "Weren't you listening to my fascinating presentation upstairs?"
Oh, sure. Is there another way out of the dam?
"It's a dead end," a tourist behind me said. "For heaven's sake, the only way out is the other elevator."
The doors opened.
"Go right ahead, folks," the tour guide told us. "Another ranger is waiting for you at the end of the corridor."
I didn't have much choice but to go out with the group.
"And young man,"
the tour guide called. I looked back. She'd taken off her glasses. Her eyes were startlingly gray, like storm clouds.
"There is always a way out for those clever enough to find it."
The doors closed with the tour guide still inside, leaving me alone. Before I could think too much about the woman in the elevator, a ding came from around the corner. The second elevator was opening, and I heard an unmistakable sound,
the clattering of skeleton teeth. I ran after the tour group through a tunnel carved out of solid rock. It seemed to run forever. The walls were moist, and the air hummed with electricity and the roar of water. I came out on a U-shaped balcony that overlooked this huge warehouse area. 50 feet below, enormous turbines were running. It was a big room, but I didn't see any other exit, unless I wanted to jump into the turbines and get churned up to make electricity. I didn't. Another tour guide was talking over the microphone, telling the tourists about water supplies in Nevada. I prayed that Thalia, Zoe, and Grover were okay. They might already be captured or eating at the snack bar, completely unaware that we were being surrounded. And stupid me, I had trapped myself in a hole hundreds of feet below the surface. I worked my way around the crowd, trying not to be too obvious about it. There was a hallway at the other side of the balcony. Maybe someplace I could hide. I kept my hand on Riptide, ready to strike. By the time I got to the opposite side of the balcony, my nerves were shot. I backed into the little hallway and watched the tunnel I'd come from. Then right behind me, I heard a sharp chhh, like the voice of a skeleton. Without thinking, I uncapped Riptide and spun, slashing with my sword. The girl I'd just tried to slice in half yelped and dropped her Kleenex. "Oh my God," she shouted. "Do you always kill people when they blow their nose?" The first thing that went through my head was that the sword hadn't hurt her. It had passed clean through her body, harmlessly. "You're mortal." She looked at me in disbelief. "What's that supposed to mean? Of course I'm mortal. How did you get that sword past security?" "I didn't. Wait, you can see it's a sword?" The girl rolled her eyes, which were green like mine. She had frizzy reddish-brown hair. Her nose was also red, like she had a cold. She wore a big maroon Harvard sweatshirt and jeans that were covered with marker stains and little holes, like she spent her free time poking them with a fork. "Well, it's either a sword or the biggest toothpick in the world," she said. "And why didn't it hurt me? I mean, not that I'm complaining. Who are you? And whoa, what is that you're wearing? Is that made of lion fur?" She asked so many questions so fast, it was like she was throwing rocks at me. I couldn't think of what to say. I looked at my sleeves to see if the Nemean lion pelt had somehow changed back to fur, but it still looked like a brown winter coat to me. I knew the skeleton warriors were still chasing me. I had no time to waste, but I just stared at the red-headed girl. Then I remembered what Thalia had done at Westover Hall to fool the teachers. Maybe I could manipulate the mist. I concentrated hard and snapped my fingers. "You don't see a sword," I told the girl. "It's just a ballpoint pen." She blinked. "No. It's a sword, weirdo." "Who are you?" I demanded. She huffed indignantly. "Rachel Elizabeth Dare. Now, are you going to answer my questions or should I scream for security?" "No," I said. "I mean, I'm kind of in a hurry. I'm in trouble." "In a hurry or in trouble?" Sort of both." She looked over my shoulder and her eyes widened. "Bathroom!" "What?" "Bathroom! Behind me! Now!" I don't know why, but I listened to her. I slipped inside the boys' bathroom and left Rachel Elizabeth Dare standing outside. Later, that seemed cowardly to me. I'm also pretty sure it saved my life. I heard the clattering, hissing sounds of skeletons as they came closer. My grip tightened on Riptide. What was I thinking? I'd left a mortal girl out there to die. I was preparing to burst out and fight when Rachel Elizabeth Dare started talking in that rapid-fire machine gun way of hers. "Oh my God! Did you see that kid? It's about time you got here. He tried to kill me. He had a sword, for God's sake. You security guards let a sword-swinging lunatic inside a national landmark? I mean, geez. He ran that way toward those turbine thingies. I think he went over the side or something. Maybe he fell." The skeletons clattered excitedly. I heard them moving off.
Rachel opened the door. All clear, but you